We are off and rolling. It's a new week. Monday, April 28th, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger Gabe Kuhn on @G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the show. That'd be Connor Dunning on @C_Dunning929. Connor, how was your weekend, brother?
It was great. I spent most of the weekend pondering the question, could 100 men take down a gorilla?
Yeah, I am
and
glad
I'm
you
gonna
brought
be honest,
that up off
I've been
the
thinking
top
about
of the
it
show
for 3 days, and I don't have an answer yet. Part of me feels like 100's a lot of people.
100.
And part of me's like, gorillas are big, and strong, and
gorillas
scary.
Gorillas can push and pull 2 tons worth of weight.
They got
so
teeth.
So about 4,000 pounds. They bite really hard. They're strong as hell. They could rip your arm off of your body.
See, that's what I keep running into is.
But quantity means something,
it
right?
It does. But who goes first, and what happens when we see that man die? Are we going to all panic?
That's the thing.
I would.
We're very.
I'm running the other way.
We're intelligent beings, so intelligence would make you run as soon as you saw the first guy get eaten alive. Right.
The plan would have to be, you send 20 after the eyes. You got to take out the eyes.
Right.
20 after the private parts, and then maybe just try to suffocate it to death with body weight.
But you'd have to.
Because you're not going to punch it.
But you'd have to. At the very least, have all 100 attacking at the same time. That's the only way.
That's the issue.
You can make it happen. But also, the other part that people brought up is how in shape is the gorilla? How in shape is the gorilla? Because are they?
I'm assuming in shape.
Well, but
they all are. Really?
Do they have the?
Are they? They've been training.
Do they have the air? Do they have the ability to take down 100 men? 100?
I feel
that's
like
a lot of one.
The conclusion I keep coming to is I think 100 could probably do it, but only about 10 to 15 would survive. It would probably kill most humans. But also, which humans do we get? Do we get John Jones?
Right.
Or
who
we get
do we
me?
Have out there? Brock Lesnar.
Me,
is
we're all
Brock
dead.
Lesnar.
Right.
Taking a run at this gorilla.
Does the Big Show get a shot at him? Do we get Shaq?
You know, the other part that really messed
me up. Who are these?
Up,
who are the men?
And you know, I think we'll have more on this later, maybe in small talk. I want to revisit
good.
This.
I assumed it may be.
But the gorilla's skin is 2 to 4 times as thick and impenetrable as human skin. So my problem is how are humans going to damage the gorilla, even if it's 100 humans? How are they going to damage it at all?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think there's only a couple of ways because you can't punch it. You have to take out the eyes. So we got to see.
Yes.
We got to be like, listen, y'all are gonna die, but we need you to go after the eyes because y'all are gonna die. It's like you're not gonna make it. But sacrifice for the rest of us, I guess.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to go after the privates. That could maybe take them down for a moment.
Yeah.
But and then suffocate it. I think if we just have to try to jump on it and body weight and dogpile it to death.
Yeah, because it can only push 2 tons. It can't push. So, you know, let's say the average human's 180 pounds.
Yeah, 18,000
pounds worth of human on this gorilla. Maybe they can handle business. This feels like a good question for one of my guests today. But as far as guests are concerned today on the 3-hour show, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly, we'll have Braden Fajoco at 4:30. How about that? Steelers defensive tackle.
He could help.
Or free agent defensive tackle. We'll have to ask him about his situation contractually heading into next season. But I want to talk some NFL, some NFL draft with him. We brought him on last summer, around this similar time, maybe a little bit earlier than we did last year. But can't wait to talk with him. He's a guy who is destined for after his playing career to be very good in the media space. Very excited to talk with him at 4:30. 5 o'clock, DeMichael Cole will join from the Commercial Appeal. He covers the Grizzlies, of course. They had exit interviews, which we'll talk about in just a moment. 6 o'clock, David Cobble joined from CBS Sports. Now, usually we have David at 5 o'clock, but we had to move some things around. He's got that U-10 soccer team that he has to deal with, right? So we had to delay a little bit. We'll have him at 6 o'clock. Blitz will be at 6:30. That is the show for you. This weekend was fun for me. You want to know why? And it brought, honestly, almost a bit of a tearjerker for me. Not only was it my wife's 31st birthday weekend, or 25th, whatever we want to call it. So shout out, happy birthday to
great
my lovely
save.
Wife. On Saturday, we got to bring Myers out to his first game at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. We went to the spring game. He got to take in the Memphis Tigers for the first time, where his dad played for for 5 years. That it was, if I'm being honest with you, Connor, it was pretty emotional for me. It really was.
That's awesome.
It was great. Saw some people, of course, that I'm familiar with. They got to say hello to Myers, and of course, he went to sleep after I think the first quarter of play. Like, he somehow fell asleep. We gave him his little headphones. By the way, cute on the kid. The little headphones, just beautiful. But he fell asleep. I guess he was not too enthused with the way the offense was playing, because the offense didn't play that well coming up on this past Saturday. Arrington Maiden had a couple of deep balls. You got to see Antoine Hill, Brendan Lewis. But the offense was clearly behind the defense. It's a transition year. That's usually how that works when you have a bunch of quarterbacks trying to get used to an offense. But it was an emotional day for me on Saturday, man. Not only was it my wife's birthday weekend, but we got to get Myers out to his first game to watch it, to see his dad's old stomping ground.
That's beautiful. That's awesome. Did he sign his letter of intent?
We're still working on that.
Okay.
I've talked with Ryan about this on several occasions. He's got a preferred walk-on deal right now.
Uh-huh.
But until we get to the year, so he Ryan said at a year, we're going to talk percentiles. So if he's 99th in weight, which he's not, he's still trying to catch up. If he's 99th in height, we can start talking about maybe getting that offer there. And I don't know if a letter of intent can be signed by a one-year-old, but we may be able to. It's a new day.
It's the wild, wild west of the NIL, baby.
So maybe, just maybe, we can rewrite the history books when he turns one. But we have to get the percentiles right.
Fair.
Before we go from preferred walk-on to full-on scholarship.
We got to see the projections.
I feel like I've done a lot for the University of Memphis. I feel like I gave a lot of good work, some good years of my career at the University of Memphis. So it's sad that they can't just give my son a scholarship off top. They're going to have 105 to work with here relatively soon if the house settlement goes through. So you have extra scholarships out there.
A Nepo baby.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I gave a lot. I feel like I do this for me in return, right? Yeah. Preferred walk-on, I don't know if it's good enough, but I'll accept it
at the very least, team manager.
The very least. Well, does he get some money for that? Does he get some type of scholarship for that?
I don't know. Maybe room and board
taken care of?
I actually don't know. I could ask. I have some friends who are managers for the basketball team.
I think some of them do get some type of.
I can tell you, videography didn't get nothing.
Nothing.
I didn't get nothing.
Did you get paid?
No. I got paid in credit, school credit, and hours.
The millennial life.
Yes. Basically. Yeah. Yeah. Basically.
Here's a Chili's gift card, brother.
Yeah. We need you to work 12 hours today during the football game. Am I going to get paid? You're going to get experience. Great.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. All right, now let's go ahead and get into it. This is the Grizzlies post-mortem show because the Grizzlies go down in a sweep to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, the games 3 and games 4, it wasn't bad. Good effort out there. 117-115 even without Ja Morant in game 4, 114-108 in that historic comeback when Ja went out in game 3. But we got a bunch of people at the podium speaking on the future of the Grizzlies, what should happen going forward. Things like that. Now, if we get down to the crux of the message about the way things need to be going forward, it comes to us from GM Zach Kleiman. We know he moved off of Taylor Jenkins. He's going to have to figure out coaching. He's going to have to figure out the Jaren Jackson Jr. contract this offseason, what's going to happen with Santi, Luke Kennard. He's got a lot of decisions on his hands. But here were the two things that really were at the forefront of the conversation when it came to Zach Kleiman. And they were confirmations of what we already knew to be true, which was it was good to hear it from the horse's mouth. He said, we unintentionally got younger, and we overweighed G.G. Jackson and Vince Williams returning. I think that is probably, when you look at the 13-17 finish in the last 30 games, when you look at where the defense headed after the trade deadline, after the All-Star break, when you look at where this team was as the new year began, I think those two things are at the forefront of why we are in the situation we are in right now with the Grizzlies. Got rid of Marcus Smart, got rid of Jake LaRavia, more on that in a second. Bet on G.G. Jackson, Vince Williams, unintentionally got younger, Jalen Wells won a spot, Zach Edey starting. You just ended in this spot where you didn't have enough experience and you didn't feel like you could actually make a real run at it by the time you got to a playoff scenario. Now, what are the ways forward for that? Obviously, these young guys are going to get older, more experienced. We'll see what happens there. But I certainly feel like, based on the way Zach Kleiman was talking, he wants to be a little bit more aggressive, find some maneuverability this offseason.
One of the things, though, I appreciated him being open and honest about the grit. Like, there was no BS about it. He was like, we weren't good enough. We're not good enough. Things need to change. We were too young. We didn't have the experience. He admitted to some wrongdoing.
I mean, he genuinely said, after watching that series, you can't say we're close. We're
No, because they're not. The roster needs a lot of work outside of the big three. The only thing I don't agree with him about is we unintentionally got younger. They intentionally got younger. You traded away Marcus Smart and you traded away Jake LaRavia to bet on the young guys. That was intentional.
Yeah.
That wasn't unintentional. That was an intentional move. So that's the one thing I disagree on, is you messed up. That was a mistake. He talked about Jake LaRavia. It was a mistake. We should have extended him. That's something that we were saying. Hey,
it was
Jake
a mistake
LaRavia,
not picking up LaRavia's option.
And halfway through the season, we were like, oh, no, Jake LaRavia is important to this basketball team. And then when you send him away, you saw even more how important he was to this basketball team. So, you know, I appreciate him being open about things and admitting to their mistakes. Now, that being said, this is the offseason, Zach. This is the offseason. If you want to keep that job moving forward, you've got to make something happen this offseason. You've got to put a team out there that can be competitive. Does it necessarily have to be a championship team? No, but they have to make strides. This has been too many seasons in a row now where this team has stayed stagnant. They have not improved at all since 2022. That you could argue that they have gotten worse because you decided to triple down on youth, intentionally do that. It is time to make changes. Go out there, spend money, go get the players. You got one job, and it's to make this roster better. Go do it.
Yeah, so the roster, as it's currently constructed, there are, I believe, let's see here. We have 15 guys. This would be 11 guys that are on contract going into next season. Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Gigi Jackson, Brandon Clark, Jay Huff, John Conchar, Jaren Jackson Jr., Zach Edey, Jalen Wells, Scottie Pippen Jr., Vince Williams Jr. Of course, Jaren Jackson Jr. is up for a big extension. That will definitely hamper their plans going into the offseason in regards to how much money will be freed up for free agents. We'll talk about that in a second. But free agents, Luke Kennard, Marvin Bagley III, Lamar Stevens, Santi Aldama, Yuki Kawamura, and Cam Spencer, because he was just on that one-year, two-way deal. I would imagine they try to bring him back. He's a restricted free agent. And it seemed like Zach Kleiman spoke rather glowingly about Cam Spencer, called him a dog, called him, you know, said he's a grizzly bear, and they want him as a part of the future. Now, this is where it gets frustrating. With Jaren Jackson Jr.'s potential contract, obviously, if he makes All-NBA, we know it's 5 years, $345 million. If he doesn't, 4 years, $229 million. When that contract, when pen touches paper, the Grizzlies are not going to have maneuverability. They're just not. They don't have a bunch of flexibility. So unless you're going to use the mid-level exception, which is about $9 million for the Grizzlies this offseason, outside of that, you don't have avenues to bring in outside free agents. And I know they have not had a bunch of success with that in Zach Kleiman's era, but they don't have maneuverability as far as free agents are concerned. So the way forward going into next season, the way you improve this team is through trade, and I don't think any of us have much of an idea of how that's ultimately going to look in the grand scheme of things. What guys will they actually make a run at in the trade market? I think people have lost faith to a certain extent in Zach Kleiman and his ability to make trades. Some people have called for him to bring in a guy into the front office to help him facilitate trades because none of them have really worked out at the highest of levels, whether it's Marcus Smart or Justice Winslow. Look at all these different swings and misses he's had. So the way that they can get this roster heading into next year is through trade because they don't have maneuverability in the free agent market. And I think people need to understand that. There's some misnomers about how much they can actually accomplish this offseason.
That is true. I do think they should use the mid-level exception, though.
Yes.
Go do that. Like
They've had it for three years.
The guy that Parker has been beating
Nikhil
the drum
Alexander
for.
Walker.
And I totally agree. Yeah, Nikhil Alexander Walker would be great. I don't know if you're going to get him because I think that they just love him where he is. He's a huge part of that team. He's a big reason why they're successful. But there are a couple guys on the market that you could use that MLE on. And if it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Jaren. Because if he doesn't make All-NBA, we know he's not going to be eligible for that Supermax. Is he going to sign it? Or is he going to say, I'm going to bet on myself, see if I can make All-NBA the next season, see if I can win Defensive Player of the Year the next season to try to qualify for the Supermax. So I don't. It's going to be interesting to see. And if he decides to sign the smaller extension, you have some room to do stuff. Not a ton, but you have some. At the end of the day, though, if this team wants to be successful, they've got to spend money.
Yes.
Go find me a team in the NBA that doesn't spend money that has success. I'll wait. I'll wait. You have to spend money. And that is why I get some fans' frustration of, I understand that the new CBA kind of handcuffs teams, especially small market teams, that has a quote-unquote big three that you're already having to pay large sums of money to, like Jaren Jackson Jr., Desmond Bane, Ja Morant. I get it. A lot of money is going toward them. That doesn't mean, though, that we can just sit here and say it's only going to happen through the draft. Like you said, you have to be aggressive in trades. Go make something happen. You've got to be aggressive with that mid-level exception. Go sign somebody useful for this team. Last year, they doubled down on youth, tripled down on youth, and it did not work. You heard Vince Williams Jr. yesterday say, I was only 80% healthy the whole season. I haven't got my first step back. All right, Vince, this offseason,
yes, here you
get
go.
That first step back. That's your number one job. Learn to play some defense. Go call Tony Allen and get locked in a gym with him. Right. Those are their jobs for this season. Climb in, go find a big fish, go find a mid-level exception. Let's get this thing rolling. Zach Edey, go find some big. Go talk to Zach Randolph. Get in a gym with him. Go get Marc Gasol. Get in a gym with him. The guys have a lot of work this offseason to do. Players have work to do to improve. The front office has a lot of work to improve. Oh, and by the way, you still got to find a coach.
Yes. And when it comes to Zach Kleiman and his messaging, there's one thing that I agree with him on, but it didn't make me feel very positively about what his aggressiveness may be this offseason. And, like, historically, he hasn't gotten anything done, and people view him as risk-averse. I think he's tried to make moves that just have not come to fruition. Kevin Durant, you know, you look at Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, bunch of DFS, a lot of guys.
Alex Caruso.
He's gone after that just didn't work out. But he did say within his long-winded, one of his long-winded answers at exit interviews, that we're not just one gritty defender, 3-and-D defender away from competing. And I agree with that. But that type of mindset's kind of interesting to me because you do need that gritty 3-and-D defender anyway. So, like, what exactly did he mean by that? Obviously, he's saying we're not just one guy away, so we're not just going to plan this offseason around acquiring one gritty defender on the wing. But you need that guy anyway. So I don't want that to be – because you're not just one guy away, I don't want that to be a reason that you're not aggressive in trying to go find that guy. You know
exactly.
What I mean? Like, it was an interesting bit of messaging there, and I'm not sure how you view it.
No, I'm in full agreement with you. We say it all the time on this show, don't let perfect get in the way of good. Don't let perfect get in the way of good. You've got to make a step forward, and that is finding some player. It doesn't have to be this package of guys where all of a sudden you're like, all right, this team's ready to compete with the Thunder. They're ready to compete with the Celtics. They're ready to compete with the Cavaliers. They're ready to compete with the Timberwolves and all these teams. No, give me the step in the right direction. This team has plateaued since 2022. Last year, we understood the injuries. Literally historic season that we have never seen in the NBA with injuries. So we said, okay, that was a lost season, but in that lost season, we thought that we found a couple bright spots. Ja was going to come back. Jaren Jackson Jr. got to improve. Okay, we still had some questions about the coach, which eventually got fired, but we had questions about the coach, and we said, but we think that this team has a chance to compete. And about halfway through the season, we were like, okay, this team might have a chance to compete.
Yeah.
And then they traded off two players that helped them compete. And then all of a sudden, this team cratered, and that was really unfortunate. You've got to get back on track of moving toward improvement, moving toward being a better team during the playoffs, because this is another season that we have seen where they have made it to the playoffs, and that offense has looked terrible in the half court. They can't do anything. You've got to get some veteran players in here that know how to play playoff basketball. Don't bring me in a young guy. Bring me in a veteran that knows what he's doing, whether it's through trade or the mid-level exception. You've got to figure something out, but you don't have to put together a 100% championship team, but you better start moving in the right direction.
And I like the way Parker Fleming put it this past Friday with me on the show. If you're bringing in somebody of that ilk, get somebody who you know can compete in the playoffs, one who has some experience there, and somebody who can't just get played off the floor. Someone who has some optionality in any particular matchup, whether team goes small, team goes big. You want somebody who can fit in any particular matchup that you're putting out there on the floor. I want to see that happen, but we've yet to see that. It's going to be a long offseason. And part of that also is finding a head coach. And Tomas Isalo paid a seven-figure buyout to bring him over here from Europe. I think he's a fine coach. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination I'm sold on him. The way I'd put it is I think he was given a tough assignment. 15 games. I think he only had two practices, really, in that 15-game stretch. But, again, I don't think he did well enough to keep the Grizzlies from performing a full search. I'm interested to see what that looks like, but I think a mix of veteran head coaches, assistant coaches that are looking for their next job, Tomas Isalo, find a pool of coaches, interview, hire the best one. Don't corner yourself into Tomas Isalo. Now, where I do become concerned with cornering yourself into Tomas Isalo, it seems like even though the rest of the year with him didn't go very well and they got swept by the Oklahoma City Thunder in the playoffs, seems like he has made a nice impression on the players themselves. Ja Morant spoke very highly of him. Jaren Jackson Jr. spoke very highly of him, and those are the two biggest voices on this team. If those guys are bought into what he's selling and what he's preaching, then maybe Zach Kleiman will listen to that, heed that advice, and potentially bring him in. But you got the sense from everybody that spoke that Tomas Isalo still, even after a tough end of the year and a sweep at the hands of the Oklahoma City Thunder, still feels like Tomas Isalo has a nice preferential spot when it comes to the coaching search this offseason.
Yeah, I was not that impressed.
Neither was I.
I wasn't impressed
now,
at all.
Now, again, isn't there are things you need to add to that. Again, 15 games, two practices.
Yeah.
Couldn't really implement anything. I wasn't impressed, though. Like, every time he got on the clipboard, we've talked about it.
Yeah,
I knew it
right.
was going to be a turnover. Yeah. The offense, while John Edie looked better, everybody else
got
struggle.
Significantly worse.
So I wasn't overly impressed, but you do have to take into account he didn't have a full offseason to work with this team.
Right.
Didn't have the full implementation of his offense. They had to rely on things that they were comfortable with, and that happened to be ball screens with Zach Edey and Ja Morant, and ball screens for whoever was the main ball handler. So, like, there is some things you could say to soften the blow about not being impressed by Tomas Isalo. But I think, overarchingly, I don't think there's anybody that's a fan of this Grizzlies team that was impressed with Tomas Isalo and the work he did.
Right. I mean, I think that you just laid it out. Every time he got on that clipboard, you didn't have confidence that anything good was going to happen. We saw a lot of late game situations where it felt like no adjustments were made or no play was called or drawn up to where they could have a successful shot. We saw the 5-second. There's just a lot of things that went wrong in late game situations with T.I. that didn't give me a lot of confidence. And then on top of that, you have, okay, Ja was playing better. Edie was playing better. Those are positive things. But at the same time, Jaren Jackson Jr. did not look like himself at all. Desmond Bain struggled. The rest of the team struggled. You had Scottie Pippen Jr. have his moments, but I think that was more about Scottie than it was anything that Tomas Isalo was doing. It's just, and the thing about the players liking him, I do think that's a positive to a certain extent. We also just got kind of done with a coach that the players really like.
Yeah.
So I just don't really care about that being a priority. Like, you need them to like their coach. I need them to respect their coach more.
And I need a coach who is going to implement the right things
yes.
in the defensive end and the offensive
yeah.
end. I think
100%.
That's simplicity.
Is positive, and you want that to happen. But at the end of the day, I can't win basketball games because my coach is liked. I got to win basketball games because my coach knows what the hell he's doing.
Yeah.
So go find a coach that knows what he's doing. If there is a coach out there like Sam Cassell or somebody that has the experience, has the respect, and the players like, that can also draw up X's and O's and maximize not just Ja Morant, not just Zach Edey, but the rest of the roster, that's the coach that I want to go with. Is T.I. going to be one of those in contention? Sure. Should he be? Sure. Do I think he should get the job right now, though? I'm not too sure because I watched with my eyeballs. During that Thunder series, it felt like he froze a couple of times, and that worries
me. When Ja Morant went out, there was just especially in Game 3. Game 4, I thought he did an okay job of getting that team to play hard.
Sure.
But Game 3, no adjustments when Ja went out.
None. You know what they were going to do. They were going to double the guy with the ball every time.
And they didn't have a guy on ball that they could trust for.
And then
you
took Jaren out with 6 minutes left.
Jaren came out with 6 minutes left. Yes. So I'm in agreeance. What, if any... veteran, experienced head coach should be involved in this search. Like, is there any name?
Like a Mike Brown.
Mike Budenholzer is done with the Suns.
I think some people have said Van Gundy.
But I don't know if Budenholzer would make sense. And Jeffrey Wright put this out there.
That would just be Jenkins again.
I saw him do not too good things with a pretty talented roster with Phoenix. I know that he didn't have depth, but didn't maximize that team by any stretch of the imagination, finishing 11th or 12th in the Western Conference. But also him and Taylor Jenkins was his
guy.
Was on his bench for years.
He was his holdback coach.
I don't know if Mike Budenholzer and the relationship between this front office with the Taylor Jenkins firing would be.
And I understand.
I would imagine it would be a contentious one.
Yeah, I also get why some people have said Michael Malone. And I do think Michael Malone is an excellent basketball coach. I just don't know if he'd get along with his team very well. And that's where it's like, you have to balance the like versus respect versus can he do the X's and O's type of deal. At the end of the day, though, I think the coach can only do as well as his roster is. And this roster isn't ready. So no matter which coach you bring in, the priority for me this offseason is making sure you have the right roster.
Yep.
Because if you run it back or you only get to add one guy that's not really that big of a difference maker, it's going to be the same story.
Yeah.
Go fix that roster. That's the number one priority. And then I think if you bring in a coach that has experience, the players respect, and can draw out some X's and O's, they'll have success. Just you've got to make sure that somebody, you got to sit them down and say, how are you going to maximize this player? How are you maximize this player? Just go through each and every single player and make sure that they have a plan that doesn't just make Ja good, doesn't just make Edie good, doesn't just make Jaren good. It's got to make the whole team good.
Yep.
I'm so tired of getting to the playoffs and watching this team. One guy dribble, one guy go set a screen, and then everybody, and then the other three guys are just standing there looking at him, waiting. That cannot happen again in the playoffs. You have got to figure something out.
Yep, I am with you. Now, while we were watching the Grizzlies get bounced out of the playoffs, the NFL draft was going along and going on. Some teams did well. Shedeur Sanders fell to the fifth round. We had prank calls. We had a bunch of things that are worth discussing, and I want to discuss them next with my guy. He's NFL free agent right now, D-tackle, Braden Fehoko, formerly of LSU, formerly with the Pittsburgh Steelers, formerly with the LA Chargers. But let's talk to him about all that and what we saw this weekend next. Connor, this may not have been the best choice for rejoin music because we're bringing on a big Drake fan. Braden Fehoko, at Braden Fehoko on X. He's an NFL defensive tackle, most recently with the Pittsburgh Steelers. B, what's happening, man? Good to talk with you.
Man, I was gonna.
Oh,
the entrance music, but you know, you're too good of a guy for me not to do that, brother.
Yeah. What would you have picked? You'd have thrown some Drake in there, or what?
I would have probably thrown some Nokia, maybe a little "Give Me a Hug, Man," some old Drake, something like that.
Okay, I got you. Now I have to open with the debate that is sweeping the nation right now. It has nothing to do with the NFL draft, even though we'll get into it. One silverback or 100 men? Who you got? Fight to the death.
Fight to the death, I say 100 men, and I was looking at the stats, right? I'm a big analytics guy. And the average gorilla is about 5.5 feet tall and weighs between 300 and 400 pounds. So, in hindsight, we're talking about a D3 center here, D3 guard maybe. And no offense, right? But 100 men, man, I don't think people understand the ratio there. And all you need is one or two sacrifices, and the other 98 can get it done.
So you're talking, you're comparing a full-grown silverback gorilla to a D3 center, but he'd have to be like a weight room warrior, that D3 center.
Big weight room warrior, bad knees, all triceps, but a work hard, a grinder type of guy, man. I mean, I see the gorilla taking out 20 to 25 guys, but it's strength in numbers at this point,
that's
brother.
That's the thing. 100 of anything's tough to. It's tough to overcome. Mm-hmm. The way I'd put it, like, imagine if you had 100, if you're a man and you had 100 golden retrievers come after you. You're not winning that battle.
Yeah.
You're not winning that battle.
No, not at all. I don't think people understand. Just like you said, the ratio, man, it's 100 to 1, right? Now, if we're talking a much bigger animal, you know, maybe a tiger or something unrealistic, then of course, yeah. But, I mean, it's a gorilla. I mean, they're 5.5 feet tall. I mean, I give advantage to the humans there.
Yeah. The only thing I can't get past is a gorilla's skin is 2 to 4 times thicker than a human skin. So how are you actually, with no weapons especially, the inflicting of damage is the issue I have with the men right now. I think I'd take 100 men because 100 men's just, that's a lot to overcome. But how do you actually inflict damage? Is the one question I can't overcome right now.
I mean, now you get into who am I going to war with, right?
If
you give me prime 2010 Brock Lesnar and you know, you got some other guys there, then of course.
John Jones with some spinning back kicks to the
face. Dude, I mean, you give me, I mean, look at these boxers they make now. I mean, Tyson Fury's, what, 6'8", 300 pounds, 290? So, well, I mean, one hit of his straight to the jaw, and I think that gorilla's going to be sleeping.
Okay. All right. We got 100 men. All right, now let's go ahead and get into the NFL draft.
Let's do it.
I want to open with you because, first of all, what's your situation this offseason when it comes to contracts and where you're going to be playing next year, free agency, all that?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm very thankful. I just finished up the last 2 years, my fifth year with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right now I'm a free agent, and so a lot of, like, the older free agents, the veteran free agents in the NFL, if you're not a part of the first wave, you kind of have to wait for the draft to trickle down, a little OTAs to go by, and then teams kind of figure out what their needs are. And then hopefully here soon, my agent, he's heard from a few teams about needs for defensive tackles, so hopefully we'll get something here soon. And let the dominoes fall where they fall.
Now, I want to get into this conversation around the NFL draft because it's annoying to me because I see the Lions and what they've done in the draft. A few years ago, if they would have never drafted a running back as high as they did, an off-ball linebacker as high as they did, a free safety. We're talking about Jahmyr Gibbs, Jack Campbell, and Brian Branch. They would not be in the situation they're in right now with one of the best rosters in the National Football League. But around the NFL draft, we get a lot of conversations about positional value. Right, and you play a position in the National Football League that doesn't the NFL scouts and front offices, they don't place a bunch of value necessarily in a run stuffing D tackle. But what do you make about the conversation, especially around the draft with positional value? I'll give you an example: Tyler Booker taken at number 12, really good guard, really good upside guy that I think can start day one in the National Football League, but he's picked at number 12. And you see a lot of Cowboys fans frustrated with that pick. They wanted a more valued position. What do you make of that entire conversation?
You know, I think it's all about where your superstars are in the NFL, right? And I look at the Cowboys. I look at a guy like Zach Martin, a first ballot Hall of Famer, going out this year. And, I mean, I think he had, more Pro Bowls and holding calls? I think that was a stat.
Right, yeah.
And so, you know, your first initial thought going into the offseason, and I'm speaking on the Cowboys' behalf here, but everybody thinks, oh, I got to go get weapons for Dak. Rightfully so. But if Dak isn't upright, you know, for what, 12, 13 years, Zach Martin kept that kept whoever was behind him upright, you're not going to get that bulk of those weapons. And I think, for me, when I look at it, in order for these premier positions to succeed, whether it's quarterback, receiver, these DBs, you know, Travis Hunter types, you need the trenches, man. You need guys like Tyler Booker. You need guys like Mason Graham in order to make things work in the back end of every offense and defense. And so when people talk about, oh, I wish we had more of a premier position, things work together for the greater good of the offense and the defense and the scheme. And I think a guy like Tyler Booker is going to come in and surprise a lot of people because I know the happiest person in the world right now is probably Dak Prescott, 100%. And that's all that matters.
Yeah, and here's the thing. When it comes to the NFL draft, too often those value positions of quarterback, wide receiver, DB, what have you, people miss on those positions more than they hit historically, especially since the 2000s began. My opinion has always been if there is somebody, whatever position they play outside of kicker and punter, for you know, we'll leave those out. Mm-hmm. But if there is a position you can fill with a guy who you feel like is a no doubt 10-year, decade potential second contract guy, I feel like you should do that with whatever pick. Quite frankly, I'm not advocating for picking a guard or a off ball linebacker number one overall. But after you get out of those top five picks, I don't know if that positional value thing should matter as much as how good is the guy? How much upside does this guy have once we get outside of those picks?
I agree. And for me, I'm not a general manager. That's way out of my pay grade. But if I ever ran a team one day and somebody asked me, what is a premier pick to you? You know, is it a quarterback? Is it a running back? Is it an O-line? Et cetera. I'd counter by saying I value cornerstone pieces over premier picks.
Right.
Right? Give me 2 to 3 cornerstone guys in a span of 3 years in the draft versus 4 to 6, 7 premier pieces. Because more than often, you can build off of cornerstone pieces. You can build off of a Zach Martin, right? You can build off of a Travis Cedric, a Tyron Smith, the trenches Dallas built over the years. Premier pieces come along every year, man. You see the name of the game at the college level, man. These skill guys just pop out, man. They're producing them more and more. But when you talk about cornerstone pieces versus premier pieces, I take cornerstone guys 24 hours of the day, 365 days a year, man.
Yeah. Now, there was a premier pick at the top of the draft. We'll get to the other quarterback that fell a little bit later in this conversation. But Cam Ward was number one overall to the Titans. We're here in the state of Tennessee. We have some Titans fans in the listening audience. Can Cam Ward change the conversation around the Titans? And with that, if you do think he can, how quickly do you think that can happen for the Tennessee Titans?
You know, it's hard because as the number one overall pick, everybody expects immediate success, right? And you look at number one overall picks throughout the years, more than often Gabe, number one overall picks either take a little longer to develop or they don't pan out as what people make them out to be. And that's not an issue on the number one overall pick itself. It's the expectations that come with being a number one overall pick. In Cam Ward's situation, I think the one thing that pops out to me is his arm strength, right? I don't know which play or what game it was this year, but I remember him rolling out of the pocket and lasering it to the back end of the end zone.
That Florida game. That Florida game off the top of the year.
The Florida game, right. Yeah. And so I remember that was kind of one of my first really like, oh, man, like who is this guy, right? And then, oh, Cam Ward, okay, let me start watching him. And then, man, like his mobility. And I watched him like just his improvisation throughout the game, like, he made things happen when they weren't there on a Miami team that honestly, man, if you gave him some of the premier, you know, speed and weapons that some of these Big Ten schools like the Egbuka, the Jeremiah Smith, these kind of receivers, I think people would be like giving Cam Ward a little bit more respect than he deserves. But as far as where he is in Tennessee, I think he's in a great place. I think with that staff there, I think they're going to let him get his feet wet, get into it, get a lot of training camp reps. They're not going to put a lot on his plate early, man. That's one of the things you don't want to do, especially as an early round pick, because like I said earlier, man, the expectations are already high. You know, he's the first overall pick. They're expecting him to be a franchise changer, a guy that's going to set them up like as a cornerstone piece for decades to come. And so I'm a fan of him. I think he's going to do really well. I like the tools. I like his ceiling, man. If I could compare him, I feel like he gives me a little bit of like Patrick Mahomes-esque. I'm not now.
Obviously, it's not one to one. I know where you're going with that.
It's not one to one. You know what I mean? But I think he gives me a lot of Patrick Mahomes-esque in the pocket and a little bit of like that Trevor Lawrence type of like pocket general, very calm in the pocket, good arm. Type of deal. So I'm excited to see, you know, how he does in third and Tennessee this year.
Well, in the end of the day, like the Patrick Mahomes things comes from different arm angles, getting out of the pocket, creating off platform, still having the arm strength to go make those throws like that one you're talking about in that Florida game where he's rolling out of the pocket, finds his guy at the back of the end zone on the money. It was a dot from about 35 yards away. So, like, I get part of that. Obviously, we don't like those comparisons because that creates even more expectation on the kid's back before he even takes a snap. Now, the number two pick. Let's get to this. One of the Colorado guys was Travis Hunter. Jags move up to go get him. You've played NFL snaps on the defensive side of the ball. You know what it entails. You know how hard it is. You know how your conditioning has to be high. I know that there's this thought that he can play both sides of the ball, but if you were a general manager, how do you view using him, utilizing him on both sides of the ball? Because I don't think you make that pick at number two unless you have that idea in your mind.
Yeah. You know, I watched this sit down with the GM and front office people as soon as they drafted him. And you know, the GM said, man, we believe in you for these reasons to be different. We want you to be different. You know, be the person you want to be, and that's playing receiver and DB. In my opinion, I think – And how I'd handle Travis is I ask him first, Travis, in your opinion, what are you comfortable playing, right? Because he probably is going to be like, I'm comfortable playing either or. But I feel as a rookie, there needs to be like a 70-30 distribution between his snap percentage, whether it's 70% offense, 30% defense, or 70% defense, 30% offense. And I'd even go 80-20. But I think when you go 50-50, being the number two overall pick, people are going to expect the flashy plays, the instant impact, all that kind of things early. And like I said, it's hard for a guy to adjust to the league. I mean, on one side of the ball. I mean, you see guys throughout the years, Gabe, that come in as a top five, top ten draft pick on one side of the ball, and it takes them 4 or 5 years to thrive. Now, I'm hoping Travis does it because, number one, it makes history. Number two, it sets an expectation. Now it sets the bar higher for people to show them and future stars in the NFL that, hey, it can be done. But in my opinion, the physicality and the speed, no offense to Colorado, right? But you're not playing Colorado State. You're not playing North Dakota State, right? Mm-hmm. There's one week where you're going to have to go cover Nico Collins, and then you turn around on offense and you got Derek Stingley covering you, right? So, like, these are things where I think they're going to have to figure it out, and I think you distribute the snaps evenly, or not evenly, but 80-20, 70-30. And I think by doing that, you get his feet wet, you get him more comfortable. Get him to make a little bit of plays on both sides of the ball. Get his confidence up. Get him to understand the speed of the game. And then by year two and three, maybe we'll see that 50-50 snap distribution of Travis Hunter, and hopefully he exceeds expectations of everybody that's kind of doubted this both ways, two-way thing kind of ball going into the league.
And, Braden, it's kind of funny. Everybody talks about the physical nature of playing both sides of the ball, injuries, and how hard it's going to be on the body. On the mind, I feel like that's probably the bigger hurdle, no? Like, just to be able to have your game plan and understand the game plan on the defensive side of the ball, then to be able to run the full route tree on the offensive side of the ball, know where you're supposed to be, know your conversions with your route running. Like, that, to me, is almost the bigger hurdle. Having played the game at a high level, do you feel like that may be the bigger hurdle?
100%. I agree with you. I think example A is just the play calling in the NFL, right? In college, you know, I'm pretty sure, Gabe, you're used to one-word play calls, right?
Oh,
one word kind of tells everybody, here's the protection, here's the route tree,
especially
here's the run action.
Especially with all the tempo that's run at that level. All the tempo.
Exactly.
It's a one-word play, go run inside zone right now.
100%. And it tells everybody on offense what they're doing. In the NFL, those play calls, you know, I'm just joking here, but, you know, John Gruden, Spider, Y2, Banana, X, Hitch, F, whatever, you know, now there's a whole lengthy play call sheet, whereas now he's got to learn maybe 70 to 80 of those in a full game plan, and then go on the defensive side, and you got about 20 to 30 more plays. So, I mean, you got 100 play calls in just a single week. Mentally, that's going to take a lot on your plate, and you know as much as I do, Gabe, when you play football, if there's a lot on your plate mentally, you cannot execute the game at how you want to physically.
Yeah.
And you know that.
Paralysis by analysis. It's a thing. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
When you're thinking too 100%. Much, when there's too many bodies moving around, you lose exactly what your you know, plan was going into the play. A lot of things happen in a split second,
100%.
And it's hard to take in all that information with 1 week of preparation on both sides of the ball. Now, his teammate, Shedeur Sanders, fell to the fifth round. I mean, I don't need you to elaborate too much, right? You're still trying to get a job this offseason. And you don't want to – you're not going to bad talk anybody, but what did you make of that?
No,
that was tough to watch over the weekend.
It was. You know, I think – and I'll just kind of keep it short and keep it watered down, but from my opinion, right, whenever I, you know, evaluate talent or whenever I, you know, look at college players, I always look at what they do on the field. I'm not the type of guy where this goes on off the field. Like, that's not for me to worry about. If you can play football, you can play football, and the NFL will find you. I think in Shedeur's case, right, I think when it came down to the quarterback class this year, the strength of the quarterback class, it wasn't as strong just as last year's class. I mean, we saw, what, 5-0 in the first round last year? And when you look at quarterbacks this year, right, if you're drafting a guy in the first round, Gabe, you're either thinking immediate starter from day one, or eventually he's going to start by week 5 or week 6 to save my job, you know?
Yeah.
And I look at the quarterback class this year. Two off the top of my head, maybe three kind of give you day one starter vibes. It's Cam Ward and, in my opinion, Jackson Dart. Outside of those two, if they're not first round guys, then why would you make a pick expendable in the second, third, or even fourth round, right? Now, in the Brown situation, they took DG in the third.
Yes.
I think that's more of a, we don't know if Deshaun's going to be healthy to start the year this year, so let's get a little insurance policy. And then you usually take four quarterbacks into training camp, and so with that fifth round pick, they took Shador. But, you know, in a general sense, I think there was a lot of discourse between the internet mocks, Twitter takes, and actual NFL execs on what they graded out these players. Because we see players every year, Gabe, talented players, award winners, drop into the fifth, sixth, and even go undrafted. But I think because of the internet stir, the attention behind Colorado this year, a lot of people felt offended. But I don't think it was really offense to what these NFL execs thought. I just think they had a lower grade than what everybody else expected Shador to go off the board this year.
Yeah, and I think everybody did. And I think there was a lot of groupthink before the draft. And obviously Shador and his dad, they create a lot of talk. So with that talk, you talk everybody into, okay, he's going to be a first-round pick, when maybe the evaluation on most people's boards was not quite that. And I think this weekend definitely showed us that. Now, final thing, your former team, the Steelers, they were actually one of the favorites going into the draft, according to, like, sports books and everything, to take Shador Sanders. At the quarterback position, though, they're in an interesting spot. I know you put out a tweet about Mason Rudolph and what that could look like. And, you know, especially with George Pickens and DK Metcalf now on the outside. We know at Oklahoma State with James Washington, he was a really good deep ball thrower, although he has not been like a full-time starter in the National Football League really his entire career. What do you make of the Steelers and their quarterback position right now? Because it's a relatively unproven and, from the outside looking in, empty room.
I mean, first off, I feel a little disrespected. You didn't give my guy Calvin Austin enough respect.
Oh, of course. Calvin, yes, deep threat as well. Come on. I'm dead wrong. I actually saw him at the spring game this past weekend when I was over there with my son and my wife.
Heck yeah, no, that's my dog. I think, you know, I think Pittsburgh is in a place right now, just being there and speaking from my perspective, I think they're in a place of, if Aaron Rodgers signs with us, that's great. If he doesn't, we're comfortable with going into the season with Mason Rudolph as our starter. And being in Pittsburgh, right, 2 years ago, in the 2023 season when we went to the playoffs, when Mason took over later in that year and he won three straight for us, and we went into that Buffalo game without T.J. Watt, with key injuries, like, Mason kept us in the game, man. Like, in Buffalo, that's a hard place to play. And I think what he showed us is, like, man, if we can give this guy, like, starter reps in camp, get him a whole offseason of running with the ones, because it's hard, right? Like, people expect backup quarterbacks in the NFL to perform at the same level of starters, but if your feet is not thrown, if your feet's not touching the water, and if you're not thrown in the fire, whereas you're getting ones-on-ones reps in training camp or in the preseason, you never really know, right? Like, everybody says the best job in the NFL is a backup quarterback. Well, that's cool until a backup quarterback has to actually play.
Right.
And for me, I think taking Will Howard was really great value. I'm a fan of Will Howard. I think he showed a lot this year, and I think the reason